Jeff Greenwald, co-founder of The Ethical Traveler, has published 6 travel books and is an instructor at the Book Passage Travel Writers and Photographers Conference in Corte Madera. Join Lori McCandish King, associate producer for the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, as she talks with Greenwald. He shares the vision for the creation of The Ethical Traveler, inspired by Nobel laureate Aung San Suu Kyi, and its impact on issues ranging from the Tasmanian logging industry to the Cambodian sex slave trade. Greenwald also talks about the world's best ethical travel destinations and offers ideas for ways individual travelers can be more attuned to sustainability. We'll hear how Jeff chooses his book topics, the ways in which his love for science fiction has influenced his travel writing, and his most recent assignment, a road trip on a high-performance, all-electric motorcycle. Come along and join Lori McCandish King and Jeff Greenwald.
This is Lori McCandish King reporting from Corte Madera, California. We're at the Book Passage Travel Writers and Photographers Conference, and I'm talking with Jeff Greenwald, founder of Ethical Traveler and author of several books about travel. Welcome, Jeff.
Hi, Lori.
Let's talk a little bit about Ethical Traveler, how you founded it, how you got the idea, and what ethical travel means to you.
Pretty big questions. So Ethical Traveler was founded in 2003, but the seed, the inspiration that led to it was something that happened about 8 years earlier than that, in 1995 or 6, when Aung San Suu Kyi, who was at that time the imprisoned, democratically elected leader of Burma, asked travelers not to visit Burma while the junta was in power. She said, "Your money is funding a murderous regime. Please do not spend your tourist dollars here." I was so moved by her statement that I wrote an op-ed that was in the Washington Post called "Voting with Our Wings," which put out the idea that travelers could have a tremendous impact on human rights and the environment if they deliberately chose to go to countries that upheld good values and human rights, that were protecting their environment, and that used the income from tourism to build social welfare. So a few years later, the stars aligned, and we created this organization called Ethical Traveler. I co-founded it with about 4 other people, with the notion of empowering travelers through their economic clout to change the world for the better.
Since that time, what has the organization been doing? How do you work, and how do you have an impact?
Well, it occurs to me that I should first back up a minute and answer maybe the most important question you answered before, which is, what is ethical travel? Ethical travel is very, very simple. It's basically just mindful travel. It's traveling with an awareness of your impact on a culture, on the people you visit, on the economy of a country, what your money is being used for, where's the money going that you're spending, and, you know, answering questions like that. Do the practices, do the activities you're doing in that country help the place, or are they ultimately harmful? So that's what ethical travel is. We've accomplished many things in the 12 years the organization has been together. We've raised people's awareness about bad practices going on in many, many countries. We've given them the means to take action and to write letters to ministries of tourism in countries all over the world. We've had an impact on the Tasmanian logging industry, on the sex slave trade in Cambodia. We've helped to establish a pilgrimage route around Mount Kailash in Tibet. We've worked on so many different things. It's kind of hard to pull them all in together, but one of our most fraught activities that we did was a boycott of travel to Nepal in 2004, when the Nepali government was selling Tibetan refugees who were arriving from Tibet, selling them back to China. And we called at that point for our only boycott in our history, which is a boycott of travel to Nepal until they stopped that practice. And Dianne Feinstein and Dick Blum got on board with this. There was a lot of political haranguing, and Nepal did stop the practice. The thing we do now that's our most visible project that we've been doing just about maybe 8 or 9 of the past 10 or 12 years is a project called The World's Best Ethical Destinations. And what we've essentially done here is we've substituted the carrot for the stick. Instead of punishing or boycotting or writing letters to countries that are doing the wrong thing, We do exhaustive research every year and try to find out which countries are doing the right thing. And then we encourage people to spend their money there, to travel to those countries, to really take a vacation off the beaten path and visit places. Instead of going to Thailand, maybe going to Cabo Verde. Instead of going, say, Hawaii, going to Palau. Visiting places like Lithuania or Latvia or places that are really promoting best practices socially, environmentally, and so forth. One of the things that happens at this conference every year that's really wonderful is we put out the call for volunteer researchers for every year's Ethical Destinations program. And last year we got almost 15 volunteers, and every one of them contributed tremendously to the final report.
Where do we find Ethical Traveler? It's ethicaltraveler.org.
And if people are interested on the about the countries that made the list in 2015 as the best places to visit in the world, the most ethical destinations, I'll give them to you in alphabetical order.
Okay,
it was Cabo Verde, Chile, Dominica, Lithuania, Mauritius, Palau, Samoa, Tonga, Uruguay, and Vanuatu.
What are those places doing that make them sustainable or ethically viable places to travel?
Well, it's all different. Every country sort of finds its path to greatness a different way. Chile fell off our list almost, but they reformed their laws to guarantee the rights of Chile's indigenous people. Vanuatu had never been on the list before, and they're carrying out a lot of land reform, also supporting indigenous rights. Samoa took major steps to improve LGBT rights. There's just a whole bunch of different things
all
that countries
things.
Do. It's all different things.
Yeah.
It could be protecting coastal waters. It could be giving more rights to women who are the victim of domestic abuse. It could be better education for children. We look for a cocktail of progress in all the countries that we choose. And just because a country's on the list 1 year doesn't mean they'll be on the next year, because we look not only for projects but for improvement in existing projects. If a country says they're going to do something, we look and make sure that they're doing it. This is a problem that Costa Rica has had. And in a way, Costa Rica, it's sad because they've been a victim of their own success. They very optimistically protected tens of thousands of acres of national land to become parks. But because they're a developing country with only 4 million people, they couldn't get together the resources to actually enforce these regulations. And this was a real problem for us. I was able to go to Costa Rica this year to meet with the Minister of the Environment, to meet with the Ministry of Tourism, to meet with the Ministry of Energy, and to meet with the Vice President, and to discuss how they might actually improve the situation in the year to come.
Do you have suggestions or recommendations for ways that individual travelers might be more attuned to sustainability and ethical travel?
Well, on our website, we list 13 tips for the accidental ambassador, and all travelers are accidental ambassadors, and those are fun to read. There are some things that are sort of obvious, but it's always good to be reminded of them, like don't give gifts to children, keep your sense of humor, don't get angry, see where your money is going. But one of the other things that travelers can do, and I really encourage it, is, you know, in this day of hyperconnectivity, almost every country in the world, even the smallest developing countries, have an English language weekly. Go online, find the weekly, read what's happening in the country, see what issues they're wrestling with, see what their environmental problems are, see if water is a problem. Go there with some awareness of what you're stepping into. You know, have some sort of talking points that you can talk to people about the things that are happening in their country. And I think they'll be very impressed that you've taken the time to look, you know, beneath the tourist facade and to really see what the locals are experiencing. It could lead to some very interesting encounters and friendships as well.
Jeff, you've also published six or seven travel books, Snake Lake most recently, The Size of the World, Mr. Raj's Neighborhood. How do you decide what you want to write about?
That's such an interesting question. I've asked it of other people, and I don't think it's really been asked of me. You know, it's a combination of serendipity and inspiration and just having a story unfold that seems like the right story to tell at the time. Shopping for Buddhas, which is probably my best-known book, unfolded very organically out of a series of shopping expeditions I made in Nepal in the late 80s, while I was at the same time working as a journalist investigating art smuggling and human rights abuses for Mother Jones and the San Francisco Examiner at that time. Snake Lake also evolved organically out of my relationship to Nepal and my presence there during the 1990 democracy revolution. At the same time that was happening, I was being introduced to Tibetan Buddhism, and I was going through a very hard time with my brother, who was in a deep, deep depression. one of my more unusual books that most people don't know about, although it's a travel book too, is my book about Star Trek and global culture.
Definite travel book.
It was total travel book in every way, because I went around the world meeting with different Star Trek clubs in Japan, in Germany, you know, in all kinds of different crazy places like Hungary. And it was really, really fascinating and instructive. And I consider that a travel book too, but that came out of a story I'd done for Details magazine about the fact that Star Trek was the only show on TV where they took scripts from people who weren't referred. Anyone could send in a script to Star Trek and it could get produced if the producers liked it. Mr. Raj's Neighborhood, my first book, grew organically out of a series of letters I'd written in Nepal in the early 80s. So, you know, they've all had these inspirations. And in fact, it was at the Book Passage Travel Writers Conference, I believe, in the early 90s, maybe at the first one, I'm not sure, that the idea for my third book, The Size of the World, emerged in a conversation with Richard Bangs and some other people who were on the panel, which was that if you're a travel journalist, it just starts to seem to you that the world is actually very small. Because you're flying from one place to another, you're not really earning the places that you go to write your stories. So what I took away from that panel that day was that I needed to discover how big this world was by going around it without taking any air transportation, traveling around the world by land and sea. And that became my third book, The Size of the World, which sadly out of print is my favorite of all my books.
You're a Trekkie from way back and an Arthur C. Clarke fan from way back. Has your interest in science fiction influenced your writing?
What a great question, Laurie. It so has. I mean, I'd say that the two main things that made me want to be a writer and a travel writer were two films I saw as a young teenager, which were Lawrence of Arabia and 2001, A Space Odyssey. And growing up during the space race and those exciting days of the Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo programs, really whetted my appetite for exotic travel, you know, more exotic than I've ever done and probably will ever get a chance to do. Science fiction is to me the ultimate travel writing because it's based on things that are real, but speculates cultures and scenes and worlds, you know, that just sort of emerge from the imagination. I love books like that. I love books that sort of take me to places that I really can never go. One of my favorite travel books, and I don't know if people really consider a travel book, is Invisible Cities by Italo Calvino, which is a story, fanciful tales that Marco Polo tells Kublai Khan about these different cities he's visited on his travels. And they're all invented by this wonderful Italian writer, Italo Calvino. But these cities that he makes up are all remarkable in their own way. And cities of bridges, cities where people all walk on their hands, cities of places governed entirely by astrologers, all these, you know, cities where it never becomes dark out, where it never becomes light, cities that are built as labyrinths. And that really also gave me a tremendous sense of how you could approach travel writing in a very creative, different way. But yes, Arthur C. Clarke, Isaac Asimov, and the contemporary writers, Alistair Reynolds, Ted Chiang, Nancy Kress, Greg Bear. There's so many great contemporary science fiction writers that every other book I read is a science fiction book.
Let's talk a little bit about travel narrative. What's some of your favorite travel narrative, and what do you think makes good travel narrative?
To me, the best travel narrative are travel narratives that have a real focus, a real purpose, a real quest to them. I really loved the late Douglas Adams' book, Last Chance to See, where he goes around the world trying to catch a last glimpse of all these endangered species and has some hilarious kind of encounters along the way. The Devil's Cup by Stuart Allen Lee, I don't remember, Lee Allen Stewart, about the quest of how coffee came to be is a great book. To the Elephant Graveyard by Tarkin Hall, I really enjoyed that book. The Saddest Pleasure was a wonderful travel book, and the author's name just slips my mind. I don't have it in front of me. I read that book years ago. Lost in My Own Backyard by Tim Cahill. I love his humor and his approach. I love the books by Mary Roach, where she travels to other countries for the specific ideas of interviewing these researchers in all these crazy fields. Who else? Though I was just thinking of someone. I was discussing the other day with the writer David Farley, David Gran, in his book The Lost City of Z, which I loved, and also just the book The Lost City by Henry Shookman, which is a novel, but a wonderful travel narrative. I don't read very much travel narrative, frankly. I like to read books that are set in other countries and open up new worlds to me, but that aren't necessarily about the process of travel as much as just being in the process of being, you know, in another country or culture. Dave Eggers' book, A Hologram for the King, is a wonderful example of that kind of book.
You travel a lot, and you seem to have adventure wherever you go. Tell us a little bit about the show that you do.
The show is called Strange Travel Suggestions, and it sort of grew out of what my favorite part of book readings always was, which was the question and answer period. That was the time where I felt I could tell stories the best and be the most spontaneous. And so I tried to think to myself, how could I bring the same sort of energy to a one-man stage show? And the answer ended up being by putting all these questions in a way on a big wheel, which members of the audience would then come up and spin. But instead of questions, the 30 stops on the wheel are sort of topics or themes of travel, like the magician or meetings with remarkable men or women or joyfully lost or the deep blue sea or what's that smell. So these are all themes that could come up on the wheel, and then based on where the wheel stops, I'll tell a story from my travels based on that theme. So I've been performing the show for about 12 years, and there haven't been any performances in a while, but it will be coming back to San Leandro in March of 2016.
And your most recent trip, which you got back from just a few days ago, was quite exciting. Tell us a little bit about that.
I assume you mean the motorcycle trip.
I'm referring to your pink finger.
My pink bandaged finger that looks absolutely comical. Yeah, so I've had a few travel assignments this spring, first to Cuba in April, then to Costa Rica in May and June. And then I just came back from an assignment for Sunset Magazine where they had me do a road trip on a high-performance all-electric motorcycle. Now, very few people have done road trips on electric motorcycles because they take so long to recharge. You can only go 100, 125 miles before you have to stop and recharge them for 8 or 10 hours.
Oh boy.
So they make road trips impractical. But we had super fast chargers that are now available, and we were prepared to take it slow. So we did a 5-day trip down the California coast and inland, which was absolutely remarkable. The motorcycle was beautiful, and except for one short incident where it kind of tipped over, fell in my hand, and amputated the top of my right ring finger, it was an eventless trip.
Other than that,
Mrs. Lincoln, how did you enjoy the play? Other than that, I loved it. And even that was all part of the adventure. I mean, it may seem like a really perverse thing to kind of relish having the end of your finger cut off, and they did reattach it. It will grow back, I hope, maybe at a weird angle. As a travel journalist, I sort of looked at it and I thought, well, that'll be an interesting scar. It would always be a story. People would always ask about it.
And one last thing before we wrap up. Tell me about the newly released Shopping for Buddhas, Jeff.
Even though I have published 6 books, you can actually say 7 because Traveler's Tales just came out with a re-release, newly revised 25th anniversary version of Shopping for Buddhas, which is a book that people really, really enjoy, and it's a fun adventure. And one of my favorite books just because it combines politics, smuggling, and shopping. And I think everyone can get behind, you know, at least 2 of those 3 themes. Yeah. So that's a fun book to pick up to start with.
Thanks so much for visiting with us, Jeff. Appreciate it.
It's been great, Lori. Thank you.
You've been listening to Lori McCandish King interviewing Jeff Greenwald at the Book Passage Travel Writers and Photographers Conference. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, featured on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more podcast sites around the world.